Hey, it's Mr. Chaz, and I want to tell you about all the amazing resources that I have available right now. So, as you know, I have the online course that's available, but I also did a course with three therapists talking about parenting with trauma. Now, we have a free workshop so you can get a little bit of a taste before you decide if you want to buy the whole thing, but look at that. It's linked in the show notes. Now, I also have free shipping on conscious discipline materials if you use my promo code Chaz, C-H-A-Z-Z, 2-3. That's Chaz23, and you get free shipping, and you'll also get a little surprise gift if you use my promo code, with all the amazing resources that Conscious Discipline has. I really recommend managing emotional mayhem if you're learning how to manage your own emotions and helping children learn how to manage their emotions. If you're looking for a general book on parenting, easy to love, difficult to discipline. If you're looking for an overall that will get all the nooks and crannies, I'll tell you everything you need to know about guiding children, I recommend the Conscious Discipline Building a Resilient Classroom book. Although it is more geared towards teachers, I know plenty of parents who've read the book and they said that it was life-changing in their parenting. So check out those resources and enjoy the episode.
Yes creates this positive affirmation, right? Yes can open that door. Yes can make us feel great and positive. And it creates an immediate sense of acceptance and safety and security to help us shift into that prefrontal. But it's the and in combination with that, because yes eventually becomes empty because we've all been yes to death by people we love and care about and work with, right? But it gets us started. But the and in yes and instigates just enough uncertainty to make us present, focused, attuned on the other person.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today we have a little bit of a different episode, talking about a topic that I don't think we've broached in the past. Before we jump into the topic, I will let our guest introduce herself. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Mary DeMichelle, and I help people learn improv, teachers, parents, leaders, therapists, so they can help themselves and help their students get into a better mental state so they can engage, whether that's learning, therapy, relationships, life. And I'm the founder of One Rule Improv, which is a fast, easy, and no-fear approach to learning, teaching, and applying improv in your life.
How does improv get you in a better mental state? Because I could see someone, you tell me, I'm okay, because you have to improv, like all of a sudden nerves start to come, anxiety starts to come. And so I'm interested in how improv can kind of get you in a better mental state. What are the benefits and how does it work?
Okay. There's a lot there. Let me just start with the obvious, because obviously improv definitely brings about feelings of oh no,
yeah,
anxiety, that it's too scary. And what's really interesting are kind of like, we're human beings and we do improv all day long. Our day has structure. We wake up, we know we're going to take a shower or have a cup of coffee or get in the car and go to work. We have structure all day long, but between that structure, we improvise. We make fast and rapid decisions based on our experience, our training, right? So we do improvisation all day long as human beings, right? But it's funny because, you know, you say improv and people are like, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen next. We deal with that all the time, just fine, not knowing what's going to happen next, right? But when I say improv, I am actually talking about that comedic art form people have seen on TV, like Whose Line Is It Anyway, right? And they're amazing, right? But what people don't understand is they don't see the process underneath those amazing performances. And it's the process that makes improv really accessible. Okay. All right. So let's just go back to the performance. You've seen Whose Line, right? You've seen people do improv on stage and you're impressed, you're amazed, you enjoy it. But would that, if you watched the Super Bowl, right? And you saw an NFL quarterback, or you watched the World Series and you saw the pitcher throw a ball and you're like, oh my goodness, they're amazing. I will never throw a ball to my child. Never. Because I'm not them. Right. I will deny my child every neurobiological benefit of learning how to catch and throw a ball.
Okay.
How that can impact their academic success, actually, because I am not what I see on TV. Right.
Fair enough.
And it's silly because so with improv, yeah, those they're amazing. They're professional, but we can still do it. And what people don't see is the process on how they're basically creating spontaneity. You
so
know?
Tell us about the process. Now I got to know about the process. What is that? Your thing is called One Rule Improv.
Right. So what I wanted to do, because, and I'm sure we're probably going to go in circles here and I'll talk about how I, you know, got into this, but improv, some people teach it in 7 rules, 11 rules. I teach it in 1 rule. And through my experience, through my research, if you follow this foundational rule of improv of yes, and you get all the benefits. Okay. And the benefits include the simultaneous development of a myriad of social, emotional communication skills. Okay. So simultaneously by practicing this yes, and rule, and you practice it in every single interaction in every single game, right? You're going to gain creativity and collaboration and communication and empathy and attunement and co-regulation and self-regulation and flexibility and dealing tolerance for uncertainty and divergent thinking. And all that is happening without you ever having to say, you need to work better together. You know, you need to speak up. You need to collaborate more. There's no nagging. There's no coaching on specific skills. It's going to happen simultaneously and authentically and naturally by yes anding. And then on the other side, we have the neurobiological benefits. So this is interesting. You know, you asked about, you know, your first question about how does it engage or what it feels like. Or if you go back to 1963, Viola Spolin, who's called oftentimes the godmother, the grandmother of improv. She has this amazing quote, which I do not have in front of me, but I could probably find, but she talks about what it feels like to do improv. And anyone who's actually done improv, they feel it. They feel this shift in their mind, in their mental state, viscerally, that, you know, whether they're tired or angry, like suddenly they're on, right? And we've known that. But now with the technology we have with the brain, we're able to look at it. So Dr. Charles Lim back in 2008 did one of the first fMRI studies out of Johns Hopkins. I think he's at UCLA now. And he looked at the brain and basically what he saw was what's been called the neural signature of flow, the activation of the medial prefrontal cortex, okay, where we get into the zone, we get into flow, and the quieting of the dorsolateral prefrontal, which is where we're like, is this right? Is this right? Is everyone watching me? Am I doing this right? Where we're recalling our prior knowledge instead of just getting in that zone and going, feeling our best, performing our best, being our best, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what he saw in his research. In 2021, I co-authored another neurobiological paper where we looked at the brains of non-professionals. These are not professionals. These are teenagers who are suffering the effects of developmental trauma. Okay. So we're talking about significant trauma that happened between birth, or even some people believe in utero, to about age 7. Okay. And how the trauma manifested is just a ton of different diagnoses. So these teens between the ages of 13 and 18 had multiple, at least 5 different diagnoses that included anything from ADHD to various anxieties, depressions, aggression, aggressiveness, relational, reactive attachment, addictions, PTSD, learning, oppositional defiance. Okay. And what we found when we looked at the brain, we looked at the brain before we were using QEEG technology. We looked at the brain before improv. They did about 15 minutes of improv. And then we looked at the brain after, and we saw the shift. We saw them get, we saw an increase in the functional connectivity of the brain. So their nervous system became better balanced. So what that looks like is if the kid was the kid who wanted to punch a wall, they didn't want to come in, they were feeling aggressive, they were harassing adults or other kids. Within moments, they shifted and they were connected and they were making eye contact and they were laughing with one another, with the group in a supportive way. If they were the kids that wanted the hood up and the headphones on and the leave me alone, or I'm not picking my head up, I'm not getting out of bed, you know, they were in that hypo-aroused state instead of hyper-aroused, they entered that window of tolerance. They went up that polyvagal ladder. They too ended up with a better balanced nervous system. So now their brain is online. Okay. Their prefrontal cortex is activated. And it's not just activated. The sections of the brain are communicating more efficiently. And the sensory motor system is now coming online as well, as they become more aware of and active within their own self and their own body. So
in the improv, and you said this 15 minutes of improv, did you say?
Yeah. I think the study may have been 20. I wanted to do 10 or 15. Scott, who was taking care of the QEG caps and everything, he wanted to do 20. But when we see the shift, you can see the shift in a minute. The longest, and the students we were working with, you know, and some of them could be described as being a step down from a psych hospital. All right, we're talking, you know, but if they weren't there, they'd be in your classroom. And in fact, I'm sure there, you know, many teachers have students because you don't know. You have no idea the trauma. You have no idea the effects. You don't know, you know, what's in front of you, you know, whether the trauma happened 30 seconds ago or 10 years ago. Yeah. But the most difficult one was one student. He took 10 minutes, and around the 10 minute mark, you saw that shift. And then a preteen student, he took about 13 or 14 minutes, and you just see that shift. And suddenly you have this awesome human being in front of you. You have this person that's seeing you and understanding you, not misinterpreting everything you say and do. Okay. Because what we saw in the research is they had a better understanding. The part of the brain associated with understanding nonverbal communication lit up. It got online. So now they could really understand what was being communicated, what the situation around them, that it wasn't a threat, because so often they perceive threat.
Okay. So after this 10 to 20 minutes of improv, you could see what you could see through the brain scans, and you could also see through the behavior, how they were more regulated and connected to the people around them. They were less shut off from people and more open to information. And one of those things that, you know, one of the things that trauma does is that it can skew our threat detection, our ability to really accurately assess threat. And so, and you see this happen a lot of times where people, maybe they receive disrespect, or someone says something or does something that may not be even directed towards a person, but a person who's experienced a lot of trauma can feel threatened and a lot of times be reactive. And we see this a lot happen in classrooms, because you're right. And a lot of times we don't even know the trauma that children have experienced, or we only know like the surface level. We only know like the tip of the iceberg. Maybe we have clues as to what trauma they may have experienced, but we don't necessarily know the whole story. And then we have these children in our classroom, or even sometimes we foster the children, or even sometimes we're parenting children who, and maybe we do know a little bit more about their trauma and and why they're so reactive. But you're saying that after 10 and 20 minutes of the improv, they were that threat detection, they were more regulated and connected so that they were able to more accurately assess threat and not be so reactive to the things in their environment. Is that
absolutely? Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. So let me ask you, all right, that sounds almost like a dream. It almost sounds like a fantasy, right? Yeah. What about exactly, you know, you kind of mentioned the benefits, but like, what about it do you think it is that creates that kind of result? Because it doesn't really seem like something that I would necessarily think of, like, oh, okay, this child has a lot of trauma. They're very reactive. They're unable to be successful in school. They're having a hard time at home. Mm-hmm. Let's put them in theater class. Like, that isn't the that isn't the conclusion I would necessarily go to. So why do you think that is? It's so impactful. The improv is so impactful.
Cool. Absolutely. So two things. I'm going to address that, and then I want to touch on what you said about theater class. Okay. So I think it's so impactful where the power comes from. I go back to that one rule, okay? Because a lot of times people they take it from, I won't even touch that yet. But we look at yes and, right? Yes. Yes creates this positive affirmation, right? Yes can open that door. Yes can make us feel great and positive. And it creates an immediate like sense of acceptance and safety and security to help us shift into that prefrontal. But it's the and in combination with that, because yes eventually becomes empty because we've all been yes to death by people we love and care about and work with, right? But it gets us started. But the and in yes and instigates just enough uncertainty to make us present, focused, attuned on the other person. We're not focused on ourselves, right? So a lot of times when people think of improv, and believe me, it can be taught in a way that is non-productive, okay? And there are many improv games that I would say they're not collaborative yes and games, okay? There could be a game that you and I are tasked with each individually coming up with some witty response, right? Like the world's worst dishwasher, and I have to come up with one, and then you come up with a separate one. And what I'm thinking in my head is, oh my God, should I say this? Should I say that? Is that, oh, I bet they say it. And I just get stuck in my head. But if I'm yes anding, I have to pay complete attention to you. Sorry. I have to pay complete attention to you. And I'm waiting to see what you say, because I have to then unconditionally accept that, validate that, and add my own idea to it. So I get out of my own head, all right? I get unlocked from that dorsal, lateral, medial, prefrontal cortex that gets quiet. Okay, I don't lose judgment. Improv is not practicing chaos and losing all judgment and going crazy. It just quiets down enough so I can think. So I think the power and the access to the brain literally is yes and it sounds so simple, but it's two words we really don't practice a lot in our lives, right?
Yeah.
For whether it's cultural or whether it's whatever, we respond to people when they present an idea with no, a bunch of variations of no, no, yes, but. Sometimes we say yes, but we're not even listening. Sometimes we say not only that, but we never validate it. So we don't tend to practice yes and a lot. And if we tried practicing it, I think you'd see the power in it. So to answer the first part of your question, we can go into greater detail. Yes and. Yes is the positive affirmation and instigates just enough uncertainty. Not too much. We're not trying to like freeze anyone up, but just enough that makes you attuned to the other person. And it's that focus on the other person that ends up getting your brain online and your sensory motor system connected again, because you're not focusing on yourself.
Yes.
You're not in your own head.
Yes, and I can see how the yes and it kind of almost forces you into actively listening, right?
Yes, it is.
To it's the validating, it's the active listening, it is the empathy that is all kind of embedded in this that sounds all of those things are healing and helpful and things that we need. So I can see that. And for those who are listening, we're gonna do an example in a little bit, probably about maybe like 5 minutes or so. So keep listening. Okay, anything. So the yes and is the part that you think is really shifts. And let me ask you this before we get into why, what, how did you find out about this? Like why? Because this is One Rule Improv, that's your company. Like I saw you at the conference, one of the most enjoyable sessions that I went to my time there. What sparked this in you to make this your life?
My beginning was much like a lot of people. I was taking some classes. I felt the transformation in myself. I just felt like I was thinking quicker. It felt good. I felt energized no matter how I went into. And I would go in after work, and I was a teacher, high school teacher. I would just be more energized, whether I was just exhausted or frazzled, I felt better. And I start to see the transformation another way. So as a teacher, I wanted to bring it to my kids. Now, I was teaching in Jersey City. I was in New Jersey. We did not have a theater curriculum that survived past probably the early 70s in New Jersey, meaning like every school had to do theater. Instead, it kind of went out the window. So I took kind of an arts integration approach. I'm like, let me put this in the academic classroom because I'm an academic teacher, and I got the results I thought I would, which was amazing. Kids who never talked to each other, we're now talking. Kids who didn't get along, we're getting along. They were more engaged. They're more happy. Teaching became easier for me because the energy and the engagement of the kids went up. They were coming on time to class. It was great, you know? So I started my own company, Academic Play, because I was a high school teacher, academic high school teacher at that point. And then I started a performing arts program. But I was passionate about, I don't care if these kids are in high school, they're still humans, and we're still biologically set up to learn by play, to learn experientially. And I never thought that within years after starting that, pre-K to third grade in elementary would be fighting to put play back in, that we would lose it all the way down. So I was really passionate about that. And then, organically, I discovered it actually helped the kids with their writing fluency. Okay, so besides all the social emotional, benefits in the classroom and the engagement, it was actually helping with writing fluency. So I'm a high school teacher. Suddenly I'm tasked with like these kids have to learn all these different styles of writing. And I'm like, they don't write. They don't pick up a pen. What am I supposed to do? And they're like, oh, run around from student to student and you prompt them. And that was just like learned helplessness because you can't get to this kid. So this kid got more irate because you were with that kid. And I just ran ragged. But by doing improv, I suddenly noticed one day I wasn't running around because everyone was writing. And, I gave that teacher energy look at one of the kids and she looked up and she goes, yes, and. I'm like, oh my God. They transferred yes, and realized. Used it as an internal prompt and were prompting their own individual writing. So I was like, okay, not everyone transfers skills they learn in one area to another. Let me make this more deliberate. So I put together a series of five games and studied it, looked at it. We got that published in 2015. And what we saw was improv did two things. Either one, it addressed social emotional issues of I hate this class, I hate school, I hate writing, I don't want to write. Or it actually addressed literacy deficits. Okay, which brings us into possibly this COVID situation. Because a lot of literacy skills develop between, 4 and 7 years old. And we've just took kids out of social interaction for in this crucial time period. So a lot of times we think like we're just going to, you know, now make them write by themselves, but making that jump from collaborative conversation to isolated writing is a really big jump. And what I saw in the high school level with these kids was kids who you knew were bright, but they couldn't put two words on paper, or, you know, or even kids who didn't process as quickly verbally were now linking multiple full thoughts on paper. It helped close whatever that literacy gap was. So what I love about moving them to individual writing within like 5 days from being non-writers. Now, what I love about improv is as a high school teacher, I have no idea. You know, I mean, at some point, you know, you're teaching more than 125, 130 kids a day. Mm-hmm. Some have records, some have IEPs, some have, you have no idea. I don't know why they're not writing. I don't know why they're in this state. You know, I mean, I might be seeing behaviors, but I don't know the trauma. I might read about the trauma, but I don't know how it's going to manifest in my classroom.
Yeah.
But this tool, and I know it sounds like snake oil, right? But if all you have to do is try introducing yes and improv into your classroom, you know, what's the risk? And go ahead, ask.
Well, I wanted to know about those. You said you did a series of five games where you're being more deliberate, intentional. I'm curious about what those games were.
So what I did was I basically scaffolded. We started out with verbal yes and games. So we're expressing yes and orally. And then we move into the, so improv has, oh my goodness. Sorry. Yeah, exactly.
Improv.
So we start with expressing yes and orally, and then we move it into an internal prompt. And a great misunderstanding about improv games, because people are like, oh, I do improv games. I do them in the classroom. We start telling a story and one kid says one part and they say another, and then they say another, and it just keeps going. Improv games, storytelling improv games, actually follow narrative story structure. Improv is very structured. Okay, to have that spontaneity, you need structure. Because if you just have a group of kids telling a story, this kid's going to change the genre, that one's going to change it back, that one's going to kill his character and add his own. And all you have is a classroom of students invalidating each other by not unconditionally accepting the prior offers and building off of it. They're going to control.
Okay.
And you're not going to get those benefits you think you're going to get because you're doing improv, but you're not following the actual structure. So I took various storytelling games, scaffolded them by difficulty. Some were telling stories one word at a time. Some were being able to express greater thoughts. And then we combined that with collaborative writing, but not in a way that many teachers already use, because I've heard it, I do that. You know, we'll make up a story as a class, we'll write it on the board and everyone copies it. What? No. This is different. Oh, no. You know, and so you take the game and you play the exact same game you would do orally, but in collaborative writing. So again, within the collaborative writing, there is no time to second guess yourself, to judge yourself. There is no judgment in improv. Okay, I'm not going to judge you. I'm going to accept. I'm not judging myself. I'm going to accept. And you have this rapid growth in self-esteem and trust between self and others and acceptance, because a lot of times these kids don't accept themselves. Okay. I had this one student one time. I was doing, it was a summer at-risk summer program, and all the kids were in, and we probably had about 50 kids doing this program at once. And they broke down into collaborative writing. And in New Jersey, we have child study teams, which are basically the teams that support students with 504s and IEPs. And I know it goes by different names in different states. And they walked in, and the one said, "How is that student doing?" And I'm like, "Well, she's fine." And they're like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Well, she's fine. She's doing great. No, she's right there." And she said, "She doesn't write. She's exempt from all writing." And I'm like, "I don't just go over and look. She's doing fine." And she was writing on a just with absolute freedom and abandonment and joy. She was writing and passing her story and share. And so her issue wasn't she couldn't write. When we shifted to individual writing, what was finally observable was she had basically an obsessive compulsiveness about her handwriting. So she'd write and then erase the entire page. But once we identified that, now we're like, okay, we could work on that more, help her build that trust more, help that develop. But
Yeah.
through the arts and through play, you learn so much more by
Okay,
observing and watching.
so let's get into let's play now. Let's do
Okay,
some
great.
improv. Set us up, structure us up, and so we can play and kind of give some solid examples for the people out there. And also let us know kind of what age group this would probably fit best with. So yeah.
So here's a game. First game, you can play this, with probably pre-K, and I use this all the way up to, geriatric adults. Okay. And some people talk about this just as an exercise. I was in a professional troupe. We actually performed with this game because it still can be anyway an entertaining game, but it's highly effective. So we are going to why don't you name something that you use every day that you feel could be new and improved?
I'm saying a cell phone.
A cell phone. So we're going to design a new and improved cell phone. So you say, let's design a new and improved cell phone. And then I'm going to give my idea, but I'm going to say, yes, I'm going to validate yours and I'm going to add my own. And then you will validate mine and then add to it as well.
Okay, cool. And before we get started, this is different from the world's worst dishwasher because it's not like a competition. And like, I'm trying to come up with a really bad one, and you're trying to come up with the worst one. This is
Exactly.
something that we're doing collaboratively on the same, we're talking about the same cell phone. Is that the difference?
Absolutely. We are collaborating.
Okay,
Okay.
cool.
And that it gets missed a lot. I often have people come up, tell me about these great games they're doing. And what they're doing is for the extroverted, witty kid that can excel at that game, that's great. But that even that kid's not going to get the benefits we're talking about.
Okay. Awesome. That's a really good distinction. Awesome. Okay, so let's do that. The cell phone that can be that should be new and improved.
Yes, and it can. I'm thinking too hard right now. Yes, and it can change sizes to fit into whatever pocket you have.
Yes. And it can get Wi-Fi wherever you are in the world.
Yes, and that Wi-Fi will emit no radiation.
Ooh, yes. And you can it can transform into a car.
Yes, and it can read your emotion and not pick up calls you don't want to take.
Ooh, yes. And it can be your own personal therapist if you use the AI function.
Thank you. Give yourselves a hand.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. I see that. And, you know, I, in that, I was kind of thinking about, okay, how do I build on your idea? Because even when I said, like when I said the your phone could turn into a new car, the new Wi-Fi, it didn't really feel like it was building off of your idea as much as when you said, and the Wi-Fi doesn't give you any radiation, it felt like you were directly building off of my idea. Is there a difference when in building off the specific thing that I said and adding something kind of almost completely new, like the new car, like? Is there what like Is there a difference in the benefits of that, or does it matter?
Not so much in the beginning. In a game like this, you're gonna. So I can't really. You want? I try to tell people eventually, after a couple times through, like, you know, you can build off the person before you or something you already heard. You don't have. There's not that pressure to always come up with the new greatest idea, right? You know. However, I'm not going to judge because maybe I said something about emotions. And that triggered you to think about a new red car you really like. So yeah. You could have been adding on to what I said in an unconscious way, or you could have been forcing it too. So as a facilitator, I'm just kind of gentle about kind of watching and seeing if someone's always trying to separate themselves. And then I would try and coach them to just build off what you've heard. But at the same point, I didn't want to go down the road of designing a new car. I wanted to bring it back to cell phone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see that. So as a facilitator, if you're doing this with children, you would kind of take, you kind of notice and see if there's a pattern in mm-hmm. how they were building. And if they were taking the idea and building off of it, if they're coming up with a new idea, like the new car,
right.
And then you would kind of, I guess, what, pull them to the side and say, hey, let's try to focus on what the person is saying and add to what they're saying. Is that kind of how you would do that?
Yeah. I mean, as a high school teacher, I'm not a pull to the side person because that gets weird. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I basically just remind the whole group, hey, we're going, and I talk to them like a whole group, and I'll give them examples of how those great Marvel movies get made and, you know, movies get made and, you know, the cool tech and the video games they play. It's people all building off each other's ideas to see where it goes. You don't have to come up with yours on your own. So let's try that. And you just do it again. You know, just yeah. Let's yes and. Okay. And then, so for those who like to control, they're really going to, have practice if we do this game. So why don't name a lot of people play this as a story game. Unless I'm teaching story structure, I am not doing a story game with this, but I will take, so name a word you might look up in the encyclopedia or Wikipedia, just a single word. Not political, not religious.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Sure. Yes. So you're going to say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, and then I will say the next word in the sentence defining or, you know, talking about that word. Okay.
Okay. All right.
So you start.
So I just say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Is. Then you say.
And I do the next word.
The next word in the sentence. Yeah.
Okay. Is a.
Really.
Complex
word
to
say
when
you
are
chewing
bubble
gum. Yeah.
Okay. I see. And you know what? I did not know. Like, I kind of felt with every word I added, I felt like I kind of knew where it was going. But then with what you said, it continued to kind of change the route of what I thought, where I thought that it was going.
So for students that struggle with control, where they have to control all the time, they will actually turn to the other person and tell them what to say. They will yell at the person for saying the same word.
Yeah.
So this is like, no, this is, you just accept and add on. So it takes a few times, but it's amazing practice for those who are always trying to control everything. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So
they'll learn that they can feel safe and give up a little control and kind of go with the flow.
So, okay. Let me, I'm thinking about younger children too. And I can see this, and the young kids very much just like to insert like silly words into things.
Oh, so do adults. Oh, believe me.
Oh, okay. And I'm thinking specifically, like, if you're doing that, so I saw supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, you said is, I can imagine the next person saying, like, is, maybe someone say a fart.
Right.
And then, and like, So supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is a fart. I guess I don't know. I think for me, I would have to, it'd be my own control thing. It was like, I don't know where it's going to go.
Right.
And so I would just have to let the, is it okay if it doesn't make any sense? Do we just.
Yeah. So what you coach them to do is you let them know that you try to make it as serious as possible. And the more real you make the answer, the funnier it's going to be. Because at the end of that, you laughed out loud. There is nothing funny about supercalifragilistic being a complex word when chewing gum, to say when chewing gum.
Yeah.
And yet you laughed out loud. Yeah. And it's because improv, the magic and the comedy of improv is not trying to be funny.
Yeah.
It's the shared experience of having that attunement to each other that we find the joy in the laughter. You never try to be funny in improv, because as human beings, we know when people try to be funny and you're like, ugh. And if you get a quick laugh, it kills the game.
Yeah.
So I was in, I think it was a sixth or seventh grade one time. And there was this boy, he controlled the class. I started the class, he threw a shoe at me, right? And every game we played, he denied, no, poop, you know. And, you know, I thank you, give yourselves a hand, great, sit down. I get other kids coming up, and the other kids realized they had just as much control as he did. And they were getting the bigger laughs. And he learned within the first 15 minutes to actually yes and be serious. And he ended up getting the laughs and the attention he was craving the whole time. But now he was following the rules of the classroom and positively engaging in the with the other students.
Yeah. But so, he had to see that in action. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounded like you couldn't just tell him that it's gonna be better if you are serious.
Yeah.
He would have just kind of rejected that anyways, probably.
Right.
I would assume but then when he actually saw it in action, he was like, you know what? I can actually get on board with this. And you can kind of meet his need for attention in a better way. But you kind of have to, sounds like you kind of have to show him almost how he had to kind of see it first.
With doing what you do, you know the power of experiential learning.
Yeah.
You know, we talk too much. We explain too much. It means nothing, especially if their brains are offline. We're wasting our breath, right?
I'm doing this today. Okay, so let's do another game. So adding the words, you add a word and the idea is to be kind of serious so you can complete the sentence, complete the word. The other one was we want to create something new, and it's the yes and create something new. Yes and. Is there another one that you could teach me?
Sure, I can do that. Let me just get this in though, really quick. So improv itself is trauma informed, right? Because in every moment, we are positively accepting each other. We're listening, we're active listening, we have autonomy, we have voice, we are safe. By itself in any one of those games, right? And we know improv works because we have the research. Okay.
Yeah.
And we have qualitative research. We have quantitative research. There's a lot out there. You can check it out. If it doesn't work, it's how it's being facilitated. Okay. If it's triggering trauma, it's how it's being facilitated. So one of the things I did with my approach was not only, and as an educator, was not only to simplify the process of improv, okay, to make it fast and accessible for people, but to hone in, to simplify the process of instruction so you can create a very safe and secure learning environment for everyone, the introverts, the extroverts, those with social anxiety, those who don't want to participate, that, you know, it's all about how you facilitate it. And we were talking about with I can give you it really comes down to that. I was doing a community jam where some teenagers showed up who had no idea how to play. And again, it's improv. They're going to be funny. And they think the idea is to put the other person down to get the big laugh. This isn't stand-up comedy, the laughter comes from the shared experience and you never try to be funny. But they got on stage and they immediately were not yes-anding. They're making fun of each other. And I just said, hey, thank you. Give yourself a hand. And they didn't know what to, and they were off stage. And they tried it again and I sent them off stage again, right? But with that technique. And by the third time, they realized what was going on and they brought the house down. I mean, the one kid's father was in tears with such pride because, you know, he was just really proud. But a lot of times what I see is in the classroom is taking that kid aside, taking them out of it. You got to give them time to experience it, time to understand. Yeah. And I understand, I've been in classroom situations. I understand management, but there are a lot of things you can do that are very subtle and very invisible that really successful coaches and teachers and trainers have been doing for ages. But I really focus in on them. So improv can be fast and accessible for the facilitator. You know, this isn't, hey, have 30 kids in your classroom wander around and touch each other. If you're not comfortable with your kids, you know, standing up, you can do this sitting down. If you don't want them in front of your room, keep them in their seats, but at least try and do it. And you can do it as a full class. You can do it as a few kids. But it's so important to understand the process so it doesn't turn into, I have three funny kids in my class. They're going to entertain the class. Everyone's going to laugh and I'm going to expect benefits. Yeah. And that's not how it works.
Yeah.
Everyone, it's the powers yes and.
The benefits come from the shared experience.
It comes from the yes and, which creates the ability to have a shared experience.
Okay, yeah.
Because everyone's brain gets online, you're attuned to each other, and now you're laughing and sharing joy over stuff that is not even funny. And I don't mean that like, oh, they're laughing like crazy, but they're sharing joy.
Yeah.
You know? And then you have them to teach. Now we'll start teaching. Take a minute or two before class. Take a minute or two during class, at the end of class. And the cool part is, it's like that yes and game we did, right? Hey, yeah. What did we study yesterday? Who remembers? Yes, and this. Yes, and that. Yes, and this. Yeah. So now you get the benefits of improv, but you're actually covering your content.
Yeah.
Okay? So instead of supercalifragilistic, you know, photosynthesis, go. Right?
Photosynthesis. I guess I was the second word. Oh, you just.
Yeah. Is.
Is. A.
Process.
Which.
Involves.
The.
Leaves.
And.
Other.
Things.
Regarding.
The
plants.
There you go.
You know,
so you carried that one.
So as a teacher, you know, you get to gauge where they are, you know, and yeah. Now they're engaged and they're in a better place. They maybe just smiled. They maybe just laughed and now start class.
Something else that comes up for that is that, like, as you were talking about photosynthesis, I'm scanning my brain for all the things that I kind of know about photosynthesis. To like see if something is fits. It's almost kind of like two processes. One, it's like, what word is going to make sense here? And then two, I'm also scanning my brain for information of just like, what do I know about photosynthesis? So I could very much see where this could be almost a little bit of a very light kind of assessment tool of just where the general class is at or where like kind of people are at, just based off of like the words that they come up with. Mm-hmm. And you probably have to do it like maybe a couple of times, but I think doing it in a way that is fun and even just whatever the sentence that comes out could spark something, spark a little conversation. I can very much see this not only just being like something that you do in between like the lessons, but something that is integrated in the lesson that is a part of the actual learning, the actual conversation, rather than, oh, like I'm kind of losing my class a little bit. Let me go ahead and do this kind of Brain Break, was Brain Smart Start, whatever you want to call it. Let's do this Brain Break and then go back to the content. I could see how the content is weaved into the improv. And mm-hmm. I think that is where like the gold and the magic and the beauty of that's the gold of teaching. Like when you can do the fun activity and it's enjoyable and the content is still being delivered at the same time, like there is no better. Like I know that is the most powerful learning that you're going to be able to do in your classroom. So thank you so much for sharing that. Before we go, is there any last, it sounds like you really want to, I was going to say, is there any last things you want to say to the world about improv or about what you're doing, about One Rule Improv?
Sure. Yes. Like I said, and I understand the classroom and it is something that integrates beautifully. It does not need to be in a theater classroom. If I'm teaching theater, I'm using improv to facilitate theater and acting. Improv games, I love because they simultaneously accomplish so much, where theater games tend to focus on one thing. We're going to focus on active listening, or we're going to focus on paying attention. With the improv games, you get it all. You can integrate your curriculum and you get them into a better state to engage with whatever you need them to do. So you make their life more enjoyable. You make your life more enjoyable. You make everything you do more effective. If you want to learn more, I do have a website, onerulimprov.com. That's O-N-E, ruleimprov.com. And on that, the research articles are there, blogs, other press. I have books. If you're interested in the one about the writing, there is a book that lays out the entire program, because I'm a teacher and I wanted to share that. And I have One Rule Improv, which is the whole approach. I have online courses, but definitely the improv games are super powerful. Here's one quick note. I have time for one quick note.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So if you want to share improv with others, play games, right? If you want to check out the power of yes and, try it yourself. Try using it yourself. Okay. Respond. I also perform and we were doing a show and we told the audience, and it's very interactive and experiential, that, you know, once we solve 7 riddles, we'll find treasure. And we got to another set and the pirate captain said, and if we solve this riddle, and one little boy started to completely become dysregulated and started screaming. He said 7, he said 7, he said 7. And the mother's trying to restrain this 14-year-old physically from acting out in a crowd of people. And I ran over and I said, yes, and we got here. And if we just answer one more, we'll have treasure. I did yes and. And he looked at me and said, okay. And he ran up.
Yeah.
You know? So you as a teacher, as a leader, you try yes and. If you want to share that power, once you feel it, play improv games. Because if you start yes anding people, I mean, start nagging people to yes and, you didn't yes and me. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
So try the technique yourself. Teach others improv games.
Hey, that is powerful. And that is a really powerful teaching tool, especially when you're, teaching tool as a parent, like, you know, what comes to mind for that is kind of like how you, when you do want to redirect someone, joining with them, mm-hmm. as opposed to pushing against them, right. Kind of join, even when you want to get your child is on, is having screen time and, you know, you want to transition, kind of joining with them. And you may or may not be saying the word yes and, but just the process of joining with them before redirecting them, mm-hmm. Is so much more powerful than immediately trying to just redirect them or curve them into another direction without joining with them first. And I think the yes is that joining, and the and is that redirection part that you kind of just so skillfully did in that moment. So another kind of tip for those out there are having a hard time transitioning with children, that yes and approach can be very helpful there. So thank you so much for joining with us today and sharing all of this knowledge. I can't wait to share this. I'm going to try to share this in the next week. We'll see what happens, but I'm about to go in a classroom right now and practice some of these improv skills, and I'll let y'all know how it goes.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my